Elizabeth Esty, you recently took a trip to Afghanistan. I'd love to hear about that.
Sure. Well, thanks so much for asking about that, Alan. Well, I've been trying since I got elected and got in office 3 years ago. I've been asking to have the opportunity to go to Afghanistan, no matter what committees you serve on in the Congress. All 435 House members and all 100 senators are responsible for taking votes about some of the most serious issues, namely, do we send people's sons and daughters to war, potentially to fight and die? And I take that responsibility very seriously. So I've been trying to get an opportunity to go on one of the congressional trips to see on the ground what is happening, what is the situation there, what should be our involvement, be able to ask the kinds of questions and get the kind of detailed information that, frankly, you just can't get from a briefing paper or from a hearing, classified or unclassified. It's just different when you see things in person. I found that in my life, and that was certainly true on this trip that John Klein, decorated Marine pilot from the Vietnam era, who's on the Armed Services Committee, Republican from Minnesota, who invited me to join him and two other members of Congress on this trip.
So what did you find? Tell us what you saw.
Well, yeah, no, we saw a lot from a Black Hawk helicopter and a C-130 and, cargo helicopters too. So we flew into Kabul, met with and got briefed by General Campbell, who's the four-star general in charge of all of the Afghan operations, both for the U.S. forces and coalition forces. And I came away with it, but we also went to the eastern provinces near Jalalabad, where we're really seeing ISIS try to get a foothold. It's called ISIS-KP in that area for Khorasan province. They want to make Jalalabad the capital of, like, a sub-area of ISIS's so-called Islamic State. So they're at battle with the Taliban over control of the poppy fields. That's where the money comes from for ISIS in Afghanistan. That's where the money's come from. The Taliban has been control of the opium fields. So there's vigorous, vigorous tussling going on there. And we've got people coming over the border somewhat. And remember, we're in Afghanistan. People all of us, I think, tend to forget because, face it, we're war-weary. And it's understandable. We are. We've been there a long time. But we got involved in Afghanistan as distinct from Iraq. Got involved in Afghanistan because that's where al-Qaeda started from. I mean, that's where the attack on America was hatched and launched, was from Afghanistan for 9/11. And it remains a dangerous part of the world. We also went down to Kandahar and had a chance to meet with people there. Folks came up from Helmand Province to brief us on what the situation is there. So there's good, I would say, it was better news than I think any of us expected. Which is to say, although the Taliban had taken back territory in a number of places over the last 6 months or year, the Afghan forces have, with support from the U.S. and other coalition forces, have been able to push back and retake territory. So one of my big questions really was, do they have the will? Do the Afghan people and the Afghan forces have the will to push back against the Taliban and against ISIS? Because if they don't, there's no amount of our military strength. We, have learned that in Vietnam. We've certainly learning that in Iraq and elsewhere in the world. You need to have the people locally. We can help and support, but we can't make something happen for people who aren't willing to fight for it. And the answer there was yes, they are. And that we heard from everybody, that they really are. And so that our role there then becomes one of training, equipping, supporting them, increasing their capability and their confidence so they can precisely begin to take back that territory, secure it, move from sort of long generation of tribal corruption to more more rule of law, more regular operation. And we're seeing progress in other areas too. For example, I met with the head of infrastructure for energy. Actually, somebody who's a constituent. He's from Washington Depot, Connecticut. And he's on his third stint for USAID, so through the State Department. This is our soft power, which is really important. So he said when he first was in Afghanistan, 10 years ago, only 3% of the people in the country had electricity. That figure is over 30% now. That's transformative for a society. When we flew from Bagram Air Base, when we flew over back to into Kabul downtown, we flew over the city of now 3 million people, lit up with buildings flashing, not exactly like the Vegas Strip, but I mean, advertisements on buildings, well lit, you know, cars on the roads, and folks told me, I mean, John Klein, who's been to Afghanistan many times, said, you know, 5 years ago, this would have been all dark. Buildings bombed out, they weren't reconnected to electricity. So that's really important to see that kind of progress. Girls getting educated, girls and boys, but girls in particular getting educated in numbers they have not ever seen before. So that's the slow progress of building a democracy. They've got a coalition government. It's got its problems, but again, only coalition government in the region. And when Karzai turned out not really to be our friend, despite the fact that he speaks English, we always seem to think if they speak English, they're our best buddies, and we should know better than that. I hope we're learning that lesson. Just because you speak English doesn't mean that you necessarily are our friends. But when there was a contested government, you ended up with a coalition government. That's really remarkable if you think about their history. So those were the bright spots. I mean, the not good spots are the fact that ISIS is trying to gain a foothold, Taliban's still there. You know, it's a challenge.
Elizabeth Esty, we have about 2.5 minutes, and I know you've been working hard on the opioid issue. There are those people, governors, who are saying don't allow doctors to issue more than a certain number of prescriptions. The president said, nope, I don't like that idea because there are examples when we need to do this. What's your take?
Well, my take, this is an issue I started working on in the State House because I saw it around prescription drug addiction. And so I've been working on this since 2009, but we've now seen this explosion. In part, actually, interestingly, this is where we get unintended consequences. We got stricter about prescribing of opioids. So now actually the price of pills on the street has gone up so high, heroin's come flooding in. So you have to be smart about how you attack problems. That's one of the things I've learned. I think we do need to look at prescribing practices and make distinctions between sort of those who absolutely are going to require long-term pain management and those who have a short-term issue. And these new drugs are so powerful that I think both patients and doctors need to be really thoughtful and careful. And I'm learning from our bipartisan task force briefings and the people I've met with both in Connecticut, in the region as well as nationally, you know, in 2 weeks someone can become addicted, even less than that. Mm. So we really need to be thinking about alternative pain management, questioning what prescribing practices should be, raise awareness of patients, and frankly, one of the issues I'm seeing is, you know, teenage kids who get injured in athletics and then, you know, really unintentionally finding, you know, taking a relatively small number of pills for a relatively short period of time, but finding that it affects them in profound ways, and they get hooked fast. So athletic directors, coaches, parents, kids need to be aware of that risk and really, you know, thinking carefully about, you know, are there other things we could do? Mm-hmm. Do you really need to take that pill? Let's see how you do with, you know, something over the counter. There's a lot of different things we're going to have to look at to address this problem. It's not going away anytime soon on its own, that's for sure.
It scares the hell out of me. I never touched that stuff. They always gave that stuff to me, and I would, you know.
Well, I'm like you. It makes me feel, you know, when I've had surgery, it makes me feel like my head's separated from the rest of my body. Yeah. I hate it, so I'd rather be in pain than have that.
Yep, that's how I feel. I brought it to the police station. Okay, so anyway.
Good for you. That's the thing. Bring it to the police station or put coffee grounds and water in it.
I've heard that.
Shake it up and it destroys them. That does it at home, too.
It's quite a malted.
The do-it-yourself method.
Elizabeth Esty, we can't tell you how pleased we are that you show up, that you give us your time. You are such a great conversant, and I so appreciate it.
Well, thanks so much. Always great to be with you, Alan. And boy, what an interesting time we live in.
We do. Great to talk to you.
An opportunity to do better, and there are good things happening. And you know, next time we talk, let's talk about some of the great things that are going on in our region, because there are good things going on, good stories to tell that people need to know about.